Greetings, everyone, and welcome to the Law Hour and Editorial Review. The Law Hour is sponsored by the Gordon Law School of Isabella, Missouri. Now, the Law Hour is an educational service in the public interest, and I'm your narrator, George Gordon. The Law Hour and Editorial Review is heard nationally 7 days a week here in the United States and in more than 75 countries worldwide over the Internet. And if you'd like more information about the Law Hour and Editorial Review, please visit our webpage at georgegordon.org. Again, that's georgegordon.org. The Law Hour and Editorial Review brings you important information about law, news, and current events. So stay tuned for tonight's special report on contracts when we come back. You know, over the past century, we Americans who were once independent, capable, and able to manage our own financial, medical, and legal affairs have now been reduced to dependence, reduced to incompetence, incapacity. We've now been made wards of powerful commercial, financial, medical, and legal corporations, cartels, and bureaucratic institutions in our modern industrial society. And we've been taught to rely upon these paid professionals. You know, paid professionals like bankers to manage our financial affairs and doctors that manage and treat our health problems and lawyers who direct our business and legal affairs instead of relying upon our own good common sense. That's why I contend that it's time that we Americans who were once able to catch our own fish learn once again how to fish instead of being fed by these paid professionals. Regaining our power of attorney is the single most important step in regaining our capacity, our rights, our liberties, and our duties. Now, if you'd like to learn more about courtroom strategy and procedure, write to us here at the law school and ask for our free CD package. You write to us through the webpage, or you can send us a letter. It's educational, it's informative, it's entertaining. Best of all, it's free of charge. I prefer to just call. If you want to call us direct, the number is 417-273-4967. Once more, that's area code 417-273-4967. Now, if you're online, you can go to our website, georgegordon.org, georgegordon.org. Click onto our email machine, send us an email request. Again, that's georgegordon.org, or call us direct at 417-273-4967. Do it right now before you forget. All right, we've been talking about contracts. Contracts take many forms. The common form that we're all familiar with is called a meeting of the minds. Meeting of the minds. But we discovered that there's a new subject matter here called contracts of adhesion. So last time I gave you a couple of examples of contracts of adhesion. Your driver's license is an example of it. Now, before you send me a letter and tell me that you looked up license in Bouvier or Black and discovered that it specifically says that a license is not a contract. I'm familiar with that. I know that. But I've been told things by people before, and they were in print, and they weren't true. And that's one of them. It is true that a license is something more than a contract. It isn't just a contract, it's more than a contract. It's like a warranty card. I mentioned this to you last time. Now, a warranty card is a contract, but it's more than a contract, and it's something more than a guarantee. It is a guarantee, all right, but it's something more than that. And oftentimes we go to public school, you know, and we learn things in public school. We come out and we say, well, I'm educated now, especially if you've got a degree. You know, maybe you've been to college and you got letters after your name and you're pretty cocksure that you know just about everything there is worthy of note. Or worth knowing. And later on in life, when you get a little bit older, like I have done, you know, over the years, you know, you get smarter and smarter as you get older and older. And you learn some things that just weren't so. For instance, you know, you go to school and they tell you certain things like Columbus discovered America. Now, I believe that Columbus discovered America, and I observed Columbus Day, and God bless Columbus. He was a great man, and he done wonderful things. But Columbus didn't discover America. No, sirree, Bob. In fact, after I got a little older and I got to thinking about it, when Columbus got over here, he was greeted on the seashore. There were people already here. Did you get that? There were people that were already here. So it may well be true that if you went to France, you might have discovered France. But you weren't the first guy to discover France, because I think when you get over there, there's going to be some people already there. So I went to Mexico one time, and I discovered Mexico. But I wasn't the first guy to discover Mexico, because when I got down there, there was a bunch of Mexicans that were already there that greeted me when I arrived. And so it dawned on me that while it was true I learned that in school, I found that there was a guy named Leif Erikson got over here a few years before Columbus, and he didn't discover America either. There were already people here when Leif got here. And we go on back. I read a book here one time called America B.C. It was written by a fellow named Barry Feld. You know, he's a pretty smart guy. He was a professor up at Harvard, you know, one of those Harvard professors. Harvard, you know, from Harvard. Well, anyway, he wrote a book, and he said, you know, there were people from Europe over here in the Americas, and they were mining tin and shipping it back. There were mines, iron mines down in Brazil. That's what the word Brazil means. Brazil means iron land. And the Europeans, you know, from the Middle East, specifically the Israelites, were mining iron ore in Brazil and hauling it back and smelting it down, making swords and spear tips and stuff back in Solomon's time. So I just wanted to point out to you that it may be true that you went to school, and it may be true that you learned that Columbus discovered America, but then when you got a little older, and unless you were totally brainwashed or brain dead, you figured out that, well, he really wasn't first. He was among the first. He was a little earlier than the average, but he wasn't the first. All right. So now when we look in the dictionary and we find out, the dictionary tells us that a license is not a contract, we got the same problem that we have with Columbus, because you see, a license is offered to you, so it's an offer, and then you accept it by signing the application. So there's an offer with an acceptance. There's consideration. They charge you $5 to process this, and there's a time frame. It's good for 4 years, or until your birthday in the not too distant future. And so there's an offer with an acceptance over time with consideration. Now that's what a contract is. So a license is a contract, but it's a different kind of contract. It's not an ordinary contract. It's an extraordinary contract. And it's called an adhesion contract. And contracts of adhesion have three indicia, three things about a contract of adhesion. And they may even appear in combination. So last time, remember, I told you, number one, bargaining over the terms may not be between equals. One party may have such a strong economic power that it can dictate its terms to the weaker party, such as an insurance company. When the insurance salesman comes out and says, this is our policy, here's the insurance policy, here's the application, sign here, you don't sit there and negotiate with the guy and say, well, I want you to cover water damage. No, they've already excluded that, paragraph 18. They're not going to write that back in there unless you pay them extra. No, they'll put a rider on there. They'll sell you flood insurance, charge you more money. Number two, there may be no opportunity to bargain over the terms at all. That's typical. The contract of adhesion may be a take-it-or-leave-it proposition in which the only alternatives are adherence or rejection. You don't negotiate with the state of Texas over your driver's license or the terms and conditions. You don't negotiate with the labor union over the union contract with IBM. I mean, come on, guys. You know, these adhesion contracts, you know what they are. Maybe you hadn't thought about it in this light before, but these are just, you do it, and that's the last word. And you're bound by it. So, I remember one time as a union member, they had a rule, you had to have steel-toed shoes. Well, a lot of guys came to work without steel-toed shoes, and then one day, some guy got hurt on the job, and he didn't have his steel-toed shoes on, you know, and of course, OSHA comes in, and they require certain things, you know, certain standards, you know, in the workplace. And so anyway, it was an international harvester. And they had a crackdown. See, International has a contract with the union. The union has a contract with all of its members. And the members agree that they're going to follow the company policy. And the company policy, of course, is to follow the OSHA requirements. The OSHA requirement is that you have steel-toed shoes. And this guy got hurt in the job, didn't have steel-toed shoes on. Well, a lot of us were running around without steel-toed shoes on. And then they cracked down on us. Now, maybe you're free, white, and 21, and you say to yourself, well, I'll decide what kind of shoes I want to wear. No, you won't. Not on a union job, you won't. Not working in the shipyard. No, if you belong to the Boilermakers Union, they'll tell you what you're going to wear. And if you don't, they'll fire you. And you can sue them for a wrongful discharge, and you'll lose. Because, you see, when you joined the union, you agreed to follow the rules. Maybe you didn't read the contract, and you didn't know what you agreed to, but they'll tell you. The shop steward will come out, he'll tell you what you agreed to. Now, that's called an adhesion contract. And number three, one party may be totally unfamiliar with the terms. You can be a union member, never read the contract. And it applies to you and has consequences. And one party may have the advantage of time and expert advice in preparing it, while the other may have no real opportunity to study it. This could even be compounded by the use of fine print and convoluted clauses. Now, all of those three indicia are present in driver's license, social security, marriage licenses, union contracts. You know, insurance, mortgages, all of these big enterprises have adhesion contracts. You don't know anything about them. You join your church, you've got an adhesion contract there, but you've never seen it. You don't know what it is. The deacon doesn't know what it is. You're bound by it. It has consequences. Now, when we analyze the above, it can be concluded that the state and the individual are not equals, and although the individual may be sovereign, or believe that he's sovereign, or maybe you believe you have sovereign capacity, the state has the power position as it exercises its executive, legislative, and judicial powers, and then lords them over you, the individual. The state dictates all of the terms to its feudal serfs through statutory legislation and administrative regulations, and there is no opportunity to bargain over the terms of any of these contractual legislations. The individual, then, is left with a vote between two evils, the result of which is still evil and input during legislative sessions, which is usually ignored. However, the majority of the committee members hold the individual who attempts to influence legislation by and through committee action in general contempt and scorn. And sometimes the individual is even ridiculed and scolded by the committee chairman. Have you ever gone to the legislature and testified before a committee concerning a piece of legislation that's before the committee? You know, for instance, the seatbelt law, you know, or maybe a tax increase, and you go into the legislature or the Congress and then you sign up and there's a process you go through and you can come in and actually testify and tell them, well, I'm a voter here and here's what I think about it. Lobbyists do that. They get paid to do that. I've done it. I'm an old-timey lobbyist, and I've testified before committees many times. And as a result, I've been, ridiculed and made fun of and, you know, kind of ignored. I know how the process works. Most of you out there don't, but, you know, you can save yourself the time, effort, or energy because all those politicians are bought and paid for by the insurance or Halliburton, or Bechtel, or somebody else, pharmaceutical industry. When a bill comes before Congress concerning the pharmaceuticals, you know, the Pfizer Corporation or something like that, or the pharmaceutical industry, or the AMA, they're going to enact it in spite of. It doesn't make any difference what you people testify to or what you believe. You can take immigration legislation. The people down in Arizona are opposed to their two senators' positions on immigration. Doesn't make any difference. Those two senators, Kyle and what's his name, they're going to vote for that legislation in spite of what the people of Arizona want. It's the way the game's played. That's because there's no opportunity to bargain over the terms of any contractual legislation. The majority of people are not even aware that any contractual liability exists from these statutes. And the state is a corporate entity engaged in business, and the individuals of the state are the customers. The state has been perfecting its business rules for years, while the individual, the customer, the citizen, simply bends like a reed shaking in the wind. And the question which needs to be answered is, how does a statute become a contractual agreement? Where is the consent on the part of the citizens? Well, the answer should be becoming very obvious by now. It is the implied consensual contracts between the state, who makes the statutory contracts implied in law, and the people based upon a fiction of law and without the assent of the individual through the licensing process. Well, let's test it. Think about it. Governor Perry, remember last time I said Governor Perry comes down with a new rule. He says all females in Texas have to be vaccinated. There's a new vaccine just been put out. And the pharmaceutical industry is going to make billions of dollars on this vaccine. All right. Governor Perry is a businessman, and he runs a corporation. He's the chief executive officer of the Corporation of Texas. So the state of Texas contracts with the pharmaceutical industry, and they say, okay, there's benefits that are coming to Texas and benefits that's going to the pharmaceuticals. And he says, we need customers, and so we're going to compel all of the girls in Texas to be vaccinated. Where does he get this power? He simply goes to the inherent power of the state of Texas. It's called the police power. And enforces the police power over the individual citizens through the use of the marriage license. It comes under the doctrine of parens patriae. Who owns the children of Texas? The state of Texas owns all of the children in the state of Texas, with a few exceptions. There are a few people in Texas who do not have marriage licenses and who do not have birth certificates. There may even be a few people in the state of Texas who do have marriage licenses and birth certificates, but who have the freedom of religion because of their membership with certain corporate entities such as Christian Scientists, Jehovah's Witnesses, or some other excluded group. There may be. But everybody else, all of you Catholics, Protestants, and Jews who have your marriage licenses and birth certificates are subject to that rule, that police power, because you agreed to it. You don't know when you agreed to it, but it was when you got your marriage license or when you signed the birth certificate for your child. That's when you agreed to it. And by simply living in Texas for 90 days, you become a resident of Texas, domiciled in Texas. And so, therefore, you're subject to the terms and conditions of this contractual agreement. It is an adhesion contract. Now, can you get out of adhesion contracts? Well, yeah, you can, but you have to know what in the hell you're involved in first, and then you have to take the appropriate legal steps. You don't have to be vaccinated in Texas. There's all kinds of people down there that are going to be exempted. But most of you in Texas are going to be vaccinated, whether you like it or not. Whether you want it or not. And that's because most people are not sovereign citizens, they're rather feudal serfs. A sovereign citizen, a sovereign individual would know what his rights are. I mentioned this the other day. You know, an individual has about 1,100 rights. 1,100. But your rights aren't available to you unless you know what they are and can articulate them on the courtroom floor or, in this case, in the appropriate circumstance at the administrative level, which may be at the public school or. Now, going on, the question that needs to be answered then is, how does this statute become a contractual agreement? And it's through the licensing. A contract implied in law is but a duty imposed by law and is treated as a contract for the purposes of a remedy. A contract, let me read that again. A contract implied in law is but a duty imposed by law, and it's treated as a contract for the purposes of a remedy only. That was cited, by the way, in G.T. Fogel Company versus U.S. It's an old case, but it's a Circuit Court of Appeals case. it's implied in law. So a company like the Fogel Company has a business license. The state enacts a rule or a regulation, custom, usage, or practice. It's usually a statute. And it applies to the Fogel Company because they've got a business license. Now, I run a law school and I don't have a business license. The rule doesn't apply to me. Now, you're going to ask me, somebody's going to send me a letter and say, how can you run a business without a business license? It's a private business. Private businesses aren't licensed. Public businesses are. Now, that's why I've been suggesting to you listeners, you know, for years, you know, why don't you look into the differences between public and private business? I'm not here to tell you that you should, you know, give up or stop using your business model. I don't care what you do. But there are alternatives here that maybe you'd never heard of before. For instance, we have an income tax here in the United States. It's voluntary. Voluntary income tax. And then a lot of people assume, well, if it's voluntary and I don't want to do it, well, I'm going to stop volunteering. Wait a minute. Hang on a second. Let's suppose you find yourself in the Army. You know, you're over in Iraq. And somebody says to you, did you know that the Army of the United States is a volunteer army, that the draft is not in force and effect? And you say, oh, yeah, that's right. There's no compulsory military service in the United States. Well, I'm going to quit volunteering. And so you just pack your bags and take the first flight out of Baghdad and come back home. Pretty soon somebody knocks on your door and they say, well, I'm from the Department of the Army and you're AWOL and you're under arrest. And you say, wait a minute. Military service in the United States is voluntary, and I decided that I'm not going to volunteer anymore. How do you think that's going to fly? I think that the MP is going to arrest you, and if he needs to, he'll kill you, and then take your dead body in, if that's what's required. And I think that if it's litigated and he doesn't kill you and they just litigate it, I think you're going to be found guilty of being AWOL and sentenced to a military prison for a term of years for being AWOL. And then you may go to your grave saying, well, I was a victim of the Army. That may be, but I don't think that's true. You see, you volunteered when you signed your enlistment contract. Do you remember? You wanted to join the Army. You know, you wanted to do something for your country. So you went down to the Army recruiter. Do you remember you had a piece of paper there and you signed it? That's called an enlistment contract. Now, it is true that the Army is voluntary. And you volunteered when you signed the enlistment contract. The contract calls for your military service for 6 years. And when your 6 years is up, they will give you what's known as a discharge. Discharge. That means you've completed your service and now you're discharged from any further military service. All right, now let's apply that to the income tax. Do you remember when you signed your income tax enlistment? You're probably sitting there going, well, no, I never did volunteer for the income tax. Well, yes, you did. Yeah. Yep. You volunteered to pay the income tax. Do you remember when, and do you remember what the document was that you signed that tied you to the income tax? Well, if you don't, let me remind you. It was your Social Security card. Now, you say, well, I never signed up for Social Security. My parents did that when I was born. Okay. Then when you turned 18, did you rescind it? Most of you would say, well, no, I never did rescind my Social Security. Okay, well, your mom and dad, acting as your guardians, decided that you needed Social Security when you were born. I'm not quite sure why they thought you needed that, but somebody at the hospital said, here, sign here, and they did. They may not have known, they may not have understood any of the legal ramifications of birth certificates, marriage licenses, and Social Security. They may not have understood adhesion contracts or Kessler on contracts de-adhesion. But, you know, there's life out there. Just because you don't know something doesn't mean it doesn't exist. And so, you wanted to get a job, and so you went down to some guy and you said, I want a job. And he said, here, fill out these papers. And you signed them. And he said, on the papers, what is your Social Security number? And you wrote it in there. You didn't get a job without a Social Security number, kids. That Social Security number up there is the connecting link with the income tax. That Social Security number is your taxpayer identification number. Did you know that? That's right. It's your taxpayer identification number. And then it was enacted back in the 1960s. I forgot exactly what year. Let me see if I can look it up here. Yeah, here it is. Public Law 87397 was passed on October 5th, 1961, requiring each taxpayer to furnish an identifying number for tax reporting purposes. Because of this, employers must have the Social Security numbers of their workers to legally report their earnings. And they could not continue to employ an individual for whom they could not legally report his earnings. All right. So you say, well, we had an income tax before 1961. Okay. Well, just because they didn't enforce your Social Security number as your taxpayer ID number until 1961 didn't mean that it didn't exist. And that connecting link goes back to the Social Security Act of August 15th, 1935. That's when they enacted the income tax on individuals. They didn't call it the Individual Income Tax Act of 1935. They called it the Social Security Act of 1935. And they didn't say to you, we want to create an income tax over here, and so we want your consent, because if they would have tried to pass an income tax act in the middle of the Depression, you people would have gone ballistic. So they had to offer you something. So your government came up and they said, well, let's offer you these benefits. And that's the key. You have to receive a benefit for which you have accepted it. And Social Security is a benefit and you accepted it. Oh, you say, well, I'm too young and I didn't get any Social Security benefits. Okay. But they're promised to you when you get to be 65. And so far, Social Security is paid like a slot machine. In any event, that's the way the game is played. And I'm a reporter reporting to you that that's an adhesion contract. It's a contract, even though, I got a good buddy, his name's Larry Beecraft. He wrote a piece, he sent it to me years ago. He said, Social Security is not a contract. Larry's a good lawyer. Larry's no dummy. It's true. Social Security isn't a contract in the conventional sense, but it's an offer with an acceptance over time with consideration. It's an extraordinary contract. It's an unusual contract, but it's a contract nevertheless. In fact, nearly everything that we do in life, including the Ten Commandments, is a contract. Even God Himself imposed an adhesion contract upon us that's applicable to us, that's binding upon us today, has consequences upon us today. And you weren't there at Mount Sinai with Moses. You never said all that the Eternal has said we will do and be obedient. But those Ten Commandments still exact penalties, and they still work automatically. You go down to Flo's whorehouse and get a dose of VD, that's the Ten Commandments in operation. That's the penal clause to the contract. Just the way the game is played. Hey, let's take a break right here, and let me give you a reminder that you're listening to The Law Hour, an editorial review sponsored by the Gordon Law School of Isabella, Missouri. The Law Hour is heard 7 days a week here in the United States. We're heard worldwide over the Internet daily. For more information about the Law School and The Law Hour, please go to our website at georgegordon.org. Again, that's georgegordon.org. The Law School teaches family law, tax law, courtroom strategy and procedure, business law, agricultural law, civil rights, and biblical law from the scriptural perspective. The law school is a private, non-commercial, non-profit, non-sectarian law school that is open to individuals by prearrangement. The law school conducts a homeschooling program for adults and compact disc. If you'd like more information, you should go to our website at georgegordon.org. That's georgegordon.org. The Law Hour website is updated weekly. It has a radio log schedule and archives, and that can be accessed through our website at georgegordon.org. The Law Hour is carried worldwide over the Internet. All of these Law Hour programs are archived on the Internet by title and date for your listening convenience, and the Law Hour is an educational service brought to you in the public interest. Now, the Law Hour brings you timely reports on law, science, education, politics, religion, health, history, economics, news, and current events, and we do it 7 days a week. Now, the law school offers a free 4-hour introductory CD package. To order yours, just call the law school at 417-273-4967 and ask for it. Once more, that's area code 417-273-4967. Now, the sources of information that we use on this program are true, accurate, and correct to the best of our knowledge and belief, and the Law Hour and Editorial Review gives credit to those authors and publications that we use on this program, and we often endorse and recommend books and periodicals and papers and newsletters and so forth to our listeners. Now, these endorsements or recommendations that we give don't mean that those authors or publications that we endorse or recommend are necessarily going to reciprocate. And that's because most of these authors and publications that we cite here on the Law Hour may be hostile or political or religious or economic, sectarian, racial, or ethnic partisans whose viewpoint may not be totally endorsed by the Law Hour and Editorial Review. These opinions, beliefs, comments, views, and expressions that you hear on this program are mine and mine alone, and they do not necessarily represent the beliefs and opinions of our advertisers, the sponsors, the management, or the staff of this network or local radio station. Now, if you'd like more information about the Law Hour and Editorial Review, then go to our website, georgegordon.org, or just call us direct here at 417-273-4967, and we'll try to answer your questions as best we can. All right, we are talking about contracts, and more specifically, we've zeroed in on contracts of adhesion. Now, adhesion contracts aren't the only form of contracts out there. We have general contracts, adhesion contracts, and we have licensing agreements, licensing contracts. We have taxing contracts, legislative contracts, legislative enactments such as statutes are actually contracts. In fact, there's an old adage here in the United States. I can't speak for the rest of you people out there in the world, but here in the United States, you know, we have an adage that goes something like this, that he who is governed best is governed least. I subscribe to that wholeheartedly. And there's another adage that goes, you know, something like that, very similar to it. And that is that the people are governed by their elected representatives. We select our representatives. We select our own masters here. You know, a lot of people call that democracy. Actually, that's Republican governments, what it is. But we like to think of it in terms of democracy. So people are governed by an election. Voting, an election, is a contract. And what makes it a contract, it's an offer with an acceptance over time with consideration. So the government comes to you and they say, well, would you like to select your representatives? I mean, you've got a slate of people that are ruling over you and governing you right now. Would you like to change those people? If you would, come down and register to vote. So you go down there and you fill this application out to register to vote, this voter registration over here, and you sign it. Boys and girls, every time you sign your name, you impair your liberty to some degree. You bind yourself to some duty, some potential penalty. Okay, then election time comes up. This is the offer. You accept it. They offer you the franchise to vote, and then you accept it. And you go down and vote. You mark a ballot over here. You put your X over here, or you punch the computer screen, or whatever you do to vote. And there's consideration on this. So you've got an offer with an acceptance over time with consideration. Now somebody's got, well, I didn't pay any money. Wait a minute, kids. Wait a minute. You don't have to pay money to have consideration on a contract. Reciprocity can be the consideration on the contract. Ordinarily, we pay a dollar another good and valuable consideration. You know, ordinarily. But it doesn't have to be dollars as consideration. It can be some benefit that you receive. Benefit. What's the benefit that you receive from voting? I get to change the guy that... I get to change my master. I get a new master. It doesn't make you free. You've still got a master, but you got to choose him. Now, most people are very happy with George Bush because you got to choose George Bush. See, I'm not happy with Bush. I didn't choose him. I didn't choose Kerry. I didn't choose Bush. See, I didn't choose Gore. I'm not registered to vote. I'm not a voter. I'm a monarchist. See, all of you English people over there, you're monarchists. Most of you people in Canada, Australia, New Zealand, see, you're monarchists. And we Americans, we look at you monarchists like you're crazy, lunatic fools, you know, monarchists. I ought to point out to you, did you know that God is a monarchist? Did you know that the divine right of kings comes from God? Just thought I'd point that out to you. And that when God returns, you know this is Jesus, when Jesus returns, he's not running for election. Did you know that? You're not going to select him as your president. I don't know if religious people think about that or not, but you know, they go to the polls and they vote, and then they get caught up, you know, in this adhesion contract called voting over here. You know, and if you break the law concerning voting, did you know you can be prosecuted for voting twice and put in jail? If you violate the rules and regulations or the laws, the statutes that regulate voting, that you can be punished. Did you know there's a penal clause in that contract? All right, thought I'd share that with you. Now, I'm not subject to the penal clause in the voting contract because I'm not a voter. I'm not subject to the penal clause in the tax contract because I'm not a member of Social Security. I don't have a taxpayer identification number. I'm what's known as a common law free man practicing private business, and I'm pretty happy with the whole program. I don't pay income tax. I don't pay Social Security tax. I work every day. Of course, I lose a lot of franchise benefits. I don't have a bank account, checking account. I don't have any Social Security benefits, although I'm old enough to receive them if I wanted to, I guess. That's what they told me. So going back to Hale versus Hinkle, I'm very careful not to accept any government benefits. They offer them to me all the time. Banks send me applications for credit cards. They want to give me benefits, and I have to resist. You know, it's like it is in the big city. You know, you're walking down the street, and some guy walks up to you and says, "Hey, you want to hit a Coke? Would you like some heroin? Want to buy some good grass?" And, you know, they teach us, you know, I say, well, just say no to that drug dealer. But the temptation's there, isn't it? Well, your government comes along and says, wouldn't you like to have a low-interest loan to rebuild your house in Biloxi? Hey, wouldn't you like to have FEMA come down here and rebuild the Gulf Coast here in New Orleans? Hey, don't you want the government to come down here and butt in? Everybody says, yeah, that's real good. We want the government to come down here and butt in. Okay. Well then, anytime the government butts in and gives you some benefit over here, you got to pay for it. Did you know that? And so, if you want Social Security, you got to pay for it. Now, if you want the president to protect you, the American people, you got to pay for that. See, I don't want George Bush protecting me. And I don't have a beef with Osama bin Laden. He ain't bothering me at all. And I don't want the president to protect me from Osama. Please, Mr. President, don't do that. And I don't want the president to give me any benefits. Please, Mr. President, don't give me health insurance. Don't give me Social Security, Mr. President. Don't give me welfare. Please, don't give me unemployment insurance or workman's compensation. Don't give me any government benefits at all. I want to have a very limited relationship with the government. Any government, the German government, the French government, the Canadian government, the American government. I don't want to have any contact with these foreign and alien gods at all. Zero, zilch, none. Count me out. Most people, they listen to that and they say, that guy Gordon, he's some kind of a lunatic fringe, isn't he? He's some kind of nut. Must be a communist. Nazi, socialist, fool. Maybe he's just plain insane. Boys and girls, 100 years ago, you know, everybody in America held this philosophy. This is the philosophy of our founding fathers. Did you know that? Did you know that our founding fathers did not put a public school system into our Constitution? Oh, yeah, that's right. See, that came a long time later. Did you know that none of our founding fathers were ever educated in a public school? Just thought I'd throw that one out to you. That public school is the 10th plank to the Communist Manifesto. George Washington wasn't a communist. Ben Franklin. You know, those boys, they weren't communists. They didn't put a communist plank in your Constitution. And neither did Jesus. Did you know that? Did you know that God does not have any public school program written into the Ten Commandments or any of the statutes, judgments, and commandments that He gave you at Mount Sinai? He does have a compulsory education program. Compulsory education is required by God and required by the state. Did you know that? Compulsory education. And the guy that's compelled to provide the education are the parents of the child. It's called home school. Just thought I'd throw that one out there also. But, you know, you want to sign your kid up for public school, and that's a contract. And that's where Social Lady comes in. And if you don't do what Social Lady tells you, she'll take your kid. Well, it's not your kid. It's the state's kid. She'll take the state's child away from you and put that child in another babysitter's care. Did you know that? All right. Now, a contract implied in law is but a duty imposed by law and treated as a contract for the purposes of a remedy. An example of a duty imposed by law would be a marriage license, a building permit, or a driver's license. Thou shalt not exceed 55 miles an hour, or any statute requiring specific performance. Now, contracts implied in law implies a promise to pay, whether or not any promise was made or intended. Now, when the individual fails to perform, this is known as a quasi-breach of contract. As the corporate state demands, there must be a remedy, and that's called a penalty, a promise to pay, paid to the state, determined by the state chancellor, and as provided for in the contractual statute. And also, since there is an implied contract, a license, contract, quasi-corporate status, an intent need not be proven. Intent need not be proven because you got a contract. A promise implied in law is one in which neither the words nor the conduct of the party involved are promissory in form or justify an inference of a promise, and the term is used to indicate that a party is under a legally enforceable duty, as he would have been if he in fact had made a promise. So says Ferris Products Company versus Gulf States Trading Company. These are known as constructive or quasi contracts. Now, a contract implied in law is, however, a term used to cover a class of obligations where the law, though the defendant did not intend to assume an obligation, imposes an obligation upon him, notwithstanding the absence of intention on his part, and in many cases in spite of his actual dissent. Such contracts may be termed quasi-contracts and are not true contracts. They're founded generally upon statutory, official, or customary duties. That's cited from Bouvier's Law Dictionary, 1914 edition, volume 1, page 661. Clark on Contracts, Quasi-Contracts, page 531. All right, so what we're dealing with here is quasi-contract, aren't we? Well, quasi-contracts are only found in the civil law. They're not found in the common law. Now, if you would practice the law of Moses, I mean, just a wild concept here, but I'll just throw this out to you. Instead of practicing the law of Michigan, Florida, or New York, you instead practice the Ten Commandments and the laws of God. You actually practice, man does not live by bread alone, but by every word that proceeds out of the mouth of God, and you put that into practice, in spite of your Baptist, Catholic, or Lutheran upbringing. That's a wild new concept. divorce yourself from the civil law and cancel all of your driver's licenses and quasi-contracts, such as birth certificate, social security, marriage licenses, and business licenses, and then go out into the real world and act out your life. And what you'll find is that social lady doesn't bother you, the income tax doesn't attach, social security doesn't take 16% of what you create and produce, you can't have a bank account, you can't work at a customary job, and you live your life buying, selling, and trading using gold and silver coin under Title 31, Section 5112. Okay, now the reason I bring this to your attention is that if there's a heads, there's a tails. If there's an up, there's a down. If there's a civil law, there's what other law is there beside the Roman civil law here in America? And it's called the common law. The common law is the law of the commoners. It's the law common to the common people. What is that law and where did it come from? It's called the Ten Commandments and it comes from Moses at Mount Sinai. It's written into our federal constitution in the First Amendment, which prohibits government from interfering in your religious practices. How's that for a wild new concept? Now, I'm not here to tell you that that's what you ought to do. I'm not a preacher here telling you, you know, oh, won't you come and give your heart to Jesus and practice the Bible today? I don't care. But you got duties out here. And when you sign this military obligation and you join the army, then you have a duty to do what you're told. When you sign up for the income tax, you have a duty to shut up and pay. When you sign a marriage license, you have a duty to obey all the statutes and all of the rules and regulations that are imposed upon you as a parent by the state. So when social lady, you know, comes out and says, hey, we got this real neat social program, and the program calls for the vaccination of all little girls 12 years and older in the state of Texas, shut up, roll up your sleeve, and get your shot. Now, personally, I object to these vaccinations. I've got objections to that, and I don't want my daughter shot up. And so I don't have a marriage license, and I don't have a birth certificate. And then I have truly and sincerely held religious beliefs. And then if necessary, we'll go into court and get a restraining order against Governor Rick Perry over there to exempt my daughter. But I'm not trying to exempt your daughter or anybody else. Now, I'm not trying to protect all of the daughters of Texas from being vaccinated by Governor Perry. In fact, I think most of the children of Texas, I mean all the girls in Texas who have birth certificates, I think they all need to be vaccinated as a matter of law. I think the governor is exactly correct. I disagree with the governor's medical and health advice, but I'm sure the governor means well, and I'm sure the governor is acting in the best interests of the state's little girls. After all, he's their guardian. And you parents out there appointed him as the guardian. You declared yourselves to be incompetent and unable to make those kinds of medical decisions for your children and turned it over to the state. And now the state is making that decision for you. It's not your place to sit there and second guess your guardian's decision. But I would suggest to you people that you might question the whole concept of should you have the state acting as your guardian in the first place. Now, I'll concede this, that for most of you people out there, you need a guardian. Most. I don't know about all of you, but my observation of people in general is that they need driver's licenses. That most people need marriage licenses. Most people need Social Security. And probably couldn't live without it. But there are a few people out there, I don't know how many, but there are a few people out there that aren't brain dead who can make reasonable, intelligent, logical decisions for themselves. There are some people that could make the decision for themselves as to whether or not it would be appropriate, whether or not it's in the child's best interest, whether or not it's good medical practice to have their child vaccinated. It's not the majority. I'm not suggesting now that the majority has that capacity, but there are a lot of individuals out there who do. And in fact, there are many individuals out there who exercise that kind of capacity. Did you know that? I'm one of them. Let me explain this. I have medical capacity. I'm a parent. I have capacity to raise and to guide my child's destiny and future without a social lady, without state interference. I have the capacity to educate my child. I did. She's an adult now, and I could educate her, and I did educate her, and I think I'd done a right smart job of it. She's just a right smart girl. And did so within, by the way, the laws of the state of Missouri. And then I homeschooled her, educated her right here at home. And then the state tested her a time or two, and they said, well, Gordon, you're doing a right smart job because she's just smarter than she should be here in the sixth grade. In fact, when she was in the sixth grade, she scored at the 12th grade in 4 months. In the sixth grade. Can you believe it? Or seventh. Maybe she was in the seventh. So they said, well, now that she scores at the graduating high school senior level of the Lutey school, she doesn't need to be tested. Never tested her after the seventh grade. Didn't need to anymore. Said she's already the equivalent of a high school graduate, and she's 12 years old in the 7th grade, don't need to test her no more. And we thought that was just right special. All right, now there are some people that can do that. Not everybody, but some. And I would suggest that for those of you that think that you might be one of those some over there, that you write for our free introductory CD package, and let's see if we can't break you away from the state. Because, you know, maybe your decisions might be better than Rick Perry's. Do you ever stop and think that maybe a parent who lives with a child day in and day out, produced that child themselves, might actually, honest to God, believe that they know what's best for or better for their child than a total stranger, a bureaucrat called the governor of the state? I mean, it's a wild new idea, I concede. But, you know, there might be a few of you out there that might actually come to that conclusion. I did. I thought that I knew better than Governor Ashcroft in the state of Missouri what was better for my child. And I proved that was correct. And you might want to do the same thing. So we're talking about these quasi-contracts over here, but you know, kids, when you sign up, you're a member. When you signed that membership in the church, you're a member. And until you rescind your membership in the church, you're liable for the church's debt. Now, maybe you want to be liable for the church's debt. But don't you think that the church or the school or somebody ought to inform you when you join, that they explain to you, give you full disclosure of the liabilities? You know, not just the benefits, but also the liabilities. Salesmen don't do that. You know, you go in to buy a used car. Does the salesman say, okay, now this car has 140,000 miles on it. And ordinarily, a transmission only lasts about 100,000 miles. Now, since this car has 140,000 miles on it, we would presume that the transmission has been rebuilt at some time in the past. And if it made 100,000 and was rebuilt and it's got 40,000 on it, we could reasonably presume that it's got 60,000 serviceable miles left in this rebuilt transmission in this car, but we don't know if it's been rebuilt or not. Now, sometimes transmissions will go 140,000 miles, and this transmission could blow up as you drive it off of the lot. And this car is being sold as is. And so if this transmission goes out, we're not liable for it. Well, that's called full disclosure, but salesmen don't give full disclosure when they're selling a car, for crying out loud. Government bureaucrats don't give full disclosure, you know, when they're signing people up for Social Security, driver's licenses, or welfare benefits. And let me tell you, boys and girls, nobody's going to give you full disclosure when they're trying to sell you something, like an insurance agent selling an insurance policy telling you, by the way, paragraph 18 doesn't pay for water damage. We want to sell you hurricane insurance, but we only pay when a hurricane occurs 10% of the policyholders, because 90% of the policyholders have water damage and we don't cover that. And that's covered plainly in paragraph 18. But if your house is blown down, we'll pay you like a slot machine. But if it's washed down, we won't pay you a quarter. And then on top of that, there's a deductible. I think that we should have full disclosure, but we don't, and we're not about to get it. So if you want full disclosure, you're going to have to dig it out yourself. From the point of view of the sovereign individual, which is an oxymoron for most people, but there are some sovereign individuals in America. When this question was asked of Elijah, actually, it was Elijah was asking the question, but the angel responded, there are 7,000 in Israel who have not bowed their knee to Baal. I would presume that here in America, Canada, Australia, Western Europe, I would assume that there are probably 7,000 in Canada who have not bowed their knee to Baal. There might be even 7,000 in Australia. There could be 7,000 in America, although I haven't seen them, and I don't know where they might be. 7,000 that haven't bowed their knee to Baal here. There may be some sovereign individuals out there, but they're going to be few and far between. What has happened is that there has been a breach of contract with his government. Government has usurped the common law and replaced it with a form of the old Roman civil law. As a result, government is constantly managing his affairs without his authority. So if you think that the governor is managing your health affairs without your authority, that's true, he is. But he got your consent. If you think that the state of Texas is over-regulating you on the highways, well, that's because you got a driver's license. If you think that your government is over-regulating and over-medicating and over-directing you, they probably are, but it's not because you didn't give them your consent. And after all, that's what contract is all about. In fact, that's what law is all about. And it's the majority who are governed by the law, and they give their assent to the law by voting. So if you're a voter, you know, don't complain about Dianne Feinstein and gun control laws. I'm not a voter. Nobody's interfering with my right to keep and bear arms, and I'm not complaining about it at all. So if you've got a complaint, maybe you ought to think about democracy. Maybe monarchy ain't near as bad as you thought it was. Hey, we're about out of time, so let me give you a reminder that you've been listening to The Law Hour, an editorial review sponsored by the Gordon Law School of Isabella, Missouri. Now, The Law Hour is heard 7 days a week here in the United States, worldwide, over the Internet daily. Now, for more information about the law school and The Law Hour, please go to our website at georgegordon.org, georgegordon.org. Remember, the law school teaches family law, tax law, courtroom strategy and procedure, business law, agricultural law, civil rights, and biblical law from the scriptural perspective. And the law school conducts a homeschooling program for adults on compact disc. If you'd like more information, please go to our homeschooling page on our website at georgegordon.org. That's georgegordon.org. The Law Hour is carried worldwide over the Internet, and the Law Hour is an educational service brought to you in the public interest. All right, our time's up. We've got to leave it right there. We'll see you back here tomorrow night, same time, same station, God willing, of course. Until then, thanks for listening, everybody, and good night, friends.